Who is Esau Edom? Written by Charles Weissman. Read for you by Paul Maitrejane. This is a free tearingdownidols.com audiobook. Reproduction and redistribution are encouraged. For more free reading and listening material, please visit tearingdownidols.com. Chapter 6. The Dominion of Esau. Jacob's Blessing of Dominion. When Rebekah was pregnant and carrying Esau and Jacob in her womb, she was informed by God of the fate of the two children, telling her that the elder shall serve the younger. Genesis 25, verse 23. At that time, such a thing as the younger child being over the elder was unheard of, and Rebekah no doubt kept this revelation to herself. Esau was the firstborn, or elder, son, and thus had the birthright, which he later sold to Jacob, the younger son. Later, Jacob had gotten Isaac to officially give him the blessings that go along with the birthright, and it was said of Jacob, "Let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee. Be lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curses thee, and blessed be he that blesses thee." Genesis 27, verse 29. Jacob was thus to have rule and dominion over other people or races, and to be in a dominant position over other nations. "Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion." Numbers 24, verse 19. This blessing belonged to the inheritor of the Adam-Noah-Abraham lineage, as Adam was to have dominion over all the earth, and dominion over every living thing that moves upon the earth. Genesis 1, verses 26 through 28. Rebekah, knowing Jacob's destiny through God's revelation, favored Jacob over Esau, and aided Jacob in securing his rightful blessings from Isaac. Throughout history, the white European race has easily ruled over all the other races, and have surpassed them in technology and industry, while none have been able to subdue them. This dominance of the white race over others is an earmark of the blessings of the birthright. "The Lord shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way, and flee before thee seven ways. And the Lord shall make you the head, and not the tail, and you shall be above only, and you shall not be beneath, if that you hearken unto the commandments of the Lord thy God, which I commanded you this day to observe and to do them." Deuteronomy 28, verses 7 and 13. What race of people easily rule over all other people? Several centuries ago, when our white ancestors were coming into the light of God's word and the Reformation was sweeping Europe, our Anglo-Saxon people began to go to other continents. There are many cases in history where a handful of white European people have conquered or put to flight a great multitude of the colored races. At one time, Britain had control of all of India with less than 30,000 soldiers. When Attila the Hun, known as the Scourge of God, had subjugated all of Asia, he decided to extend his barbaric dominion to the west, into Gaul. The Visigoths, under King Theodoric, defeated the Huns in the Battle of Chalon. During the settling of South Africa by the British and Dutch, a group of some 460 colonists were encircled by 30,000 Zulu warriors. The Afrikaner colonists prayed and made a covenant with God, asking him to, quote, "give our enemy into our hand that we might be victorious over him," end quote. At the end of the historic Battle of Blood River, not a single colonist was injured, but the Zulus lost 12,000 warriors. When Santa Anna marched into Texas with the aim to kill all the white gringos in the land, his well-trained and supplied army of 1,300 was defeated by 600 volunteers under General Sam Houston in a battle that lasted only 20 minutes. During the Mexican War, 1847, Santa Anna sent 20,000 troops to destroy the American forces under General Zachary Taylor. But Taylor, with an army one-fourth the size of Santa Anna's, drove the Mexicans back in the hotly contested Battle of Buena Vista, February 23, 1847. Footnote: David S. Muzzy, An American History, Gin and Company, 1933, page 277. End footnote. Santa Anna retreated southward to defend Mexico City with a force of 30,000 soldiers. But General Winfield Scott, with an army of about 10,000, entered the Mexican capital, subdued its forces, and raised the flag over the Palace of the Montezumas. The colored race, Mexico, was forced to cede half of its territory, including California, Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico, into the hands of the white race, America. Thus was fulfilled the promise to Jacob Israel: "And five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword." Leviticus 26, verse 8. History is full of many instances where the colored races could not stand up against God's Israel people. Why? Because God had given them dominion over other peoples. From Adam to Seth to Noah to Abraham to Jacob, the birthright included the right to govern or rule. While the Israel, white, nations were to have this right of dominion, it was conditional on Israel abiding by God's law. If that race departs too far from God's laws, then "the Lord shall cause you to be smitten before your enemies. The stranger, or alien, that is among you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail." Deuteronomy 28, verses 25, 43, and 44. The heathen races, knowing that this is the relationship God has with Jacob Israel, have often attempted to use it to their advantage and gain dominion over Israel by seducing and deceiving them into violating God's law. Thus, God told us not to allow the heathen in our land or make covenants with them. Exodus 23, verses 32 through 33, Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 5. Esau's status and dominion. When Esau learned that Jacob had acquired the blessings of the birthright, he mourned and begged Isaac, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Genesis 27, verse 36. Isaac answered Esau, saying that Jacob had received the blessing, making him "thy lord," or master over Esau. But Esau persisted and asked, "Have you but one blessing for me?" In what can be construed as a type of blessing and prophecy, Isaac stated this to Esau regarding his fate: "And by thy sword shall you live, and you shall serve your brother, Jacob. And it shall come to pass, when you shall have the dominion, that you shall break his yoke from off your neck." Genesis 27, verse 40. The words "have dominion" used here is in some versions translated as "become restless" or "grow restive." But this explains only part of what is meant here. The Hebrew word used here is "rud," Strong's number 7300, and means to ramble or tramp about, be free, disconsolate, have the dominion, be lord, mourn, rule. Footnote: Strong's Concordance of the Bible. This word is given the meaning "to rule" in Young's Analytical Concordance to the Bible. The word "rud" is also translated "we are lords," Jeremiah 2, verse 31, and "ruleth," Hosea 11, verse 12, in the King James Version, Wigram Englishman's Concordance. End footnote. This verse is thus saying that there will come a time when Esau will be unhappy with the yoke of Jacob about him, and will ramble and tramp about until he gains the position of rule or dominion. Only then will Esau be satisfied. Thus, although Esau was assigned to be a servant of Jacob, there would be a time when Esau would gain dominion over Jacob and break the yoke of Jacob off his neck, that is to say, destroy the dominion of Jacob. So did the Edomites ever have dominion over the Israelites in Bible history? No, not once did this ever occur. Therefore, we must look to more recent times to find the fulfillment of this prophecy. This dominion of Esau, through his wrestling free of the yoke or dominion of Jacob, is being fulfilled through the control and stranglehold the Jews have gained over the white race. With two peoples that are so opposite in character as Jacob, the white race, and Esau, the Jews, one must predominate over the other. They can never have mutual agreement or equal status. If the laws, religion, government, and morals that are characteristic of Jacob are followed in the land, then those of Esau are rejected. Esau will, by nature of his character, be under the subjection of Jacob. And so it was with the Jews in much of European and American history. The Jews, because of their contrasting customs and religion, were under specific regulations in white Christian nations. As one history book illustrates, there, the Jews, religion, set them apart from the rest of the population of the country. The whole of ordinary life was conducted on the supposition that men were members of the same religious body. The Jews did not fit into this framework, and so had to live a life apart. They were allowed to live only in certain wards of the larger towns, which were known as Jewries. They were required also to wear a special dress, or a badge of yellow cloth on the breast. They were considered to be living in the country not by common right, but by special consent of the king, and under his protection. They were subject, therefore, not to the common law, but to special regulations made for them by the king or his officers. Footnote: Edward P. Cheney, A Short History of England, Boston, Ginn and Company, 1919, page 217. End footnote. Such was the case regarding the status of the Jew in much of Europe, where they were subject to the rule of the white race. In early America, Jews could not vote, hold public office, be a witness in court, and were socially regarded as a subordinate class of persons. Due to their contrasting traits, when the white race, Jacob, governs, the Jew, Esau, will always be in a subservient position. All of history verifies this. In a white Christian nation, the Jew will always be the tail. The historical rule of the white race was the yoke of Jacob on Esau's neck, which Esau was prophesied to break someday, and this yoke could only be broken by Esau gaining the dominion, or rule. For Esau to rule or have the dominion in a nation over Jacob's descendants, he must establish his principles of law and government, socialism, his religion, Judaism, and his code of morals, Talmudic ethics. He must have his method of economics established, credit and usury, as well as his way of life, a Judaic society, thus bringing about the destruction of white rule and society. The day when the Jew was first admitted to civil rights, the Christian state was in danger. The entrance of the Jew into society marked the destruction of the state, meaning by state, the Christian state. Footnote: Bernard Lazar, Antisemitism, Its History and Causes, page 162. End footnote. Thus, if the ideals, values, laws, and religion of Esau Edom, Jews, becomes predominant in the land, then the white Christian society will die, and its people will be in subjection to the Jew and his ways. In the past 200 years, Esau has gradually broken the yoke or rule of the white race in such areas by becoming predominant in them. Our debauched society is evidence to this, as Henry Ford stated. It is true that there is a distinct Jewish idea in business and professional life which has eaten away the traditional principles of honor in which Anglo-Saxon life was erected. Every Jew knows that. Every non-Jew knows it. It is true that beneath all the network of trivializing influences in literature, art, politics, economics, fashion, and sport is Jewish influence controlled by Jewish groups. Their Orientalism has served as a subtle poison to dry up the sound serum of Anglo-Saxon morality on which this country thrived in its formative years. Footnote: The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, Dearborn Publishing Company, 1922, Dearborn, Michigan, Volume 4, pages 224-25. Economic control. The history of money and monetary control is a history of freedom and slavery. This is to say, economic bondage or economic freedom. The Jews have long been adept at the primary means for putting other people under economic bondage via banking, money lending, and usury. The use and control of usury, the loaning of money at interest, is a powerful tool for gaining financial dominion over others. Not only is the borrower servant to the lender, Proverbs 22, verse 7, because of the debt he owes, but he must also pay more than what he borrowed. By making one's ability to pay off a debt more difficult, the lender can take possession of property put up as security. The Jewish Talmud allows the use of usury by recognizing several different modes of obtaining increase or interest from money loaned. Footnote: see the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1905, volume 12, page 389. In the Talmud, it states, "It is allowed to cheat a Gentile, non-Jew, and take usury from him." Baba Kama, 113a. End footnote. The Bible, however, prohibits any and all increase, interest, or gain when there is a loan of money, food, or anything. Deuteronomy 23, verse 19, Leviticus 25, verse 37. The Jews follow not the Bible, but the Talmud, as their code to live by. The Jewish writer Samuel Roth explains the Jews' economic role as follows. "We see the Jew, then, in business as promoter, moneylender, salesman par excellence, the author and chief instigator of a system of credit by which a nationwide usury rises like a golem, a created monster, with a million hands on a million throats, to choke the honor and freedom of movement of a hard-working people." Footnote: Samuel Roth, Jews Must Live, 1934, page 123. And footnote. The Jews became moneylenders in most of Europe, lending to nations, princes, merchants, and farmers, any that would need money. The word Jew became synonymous with moneylender and usurer. The real key to the Jews' economic rule over nations and the making of usury and credit more effective is their international banking dynasty. This scheme began in England when the Jews, led by Rabbi Manasseh ben Israel, were allowed to return to that nation in 1657 by conspiring with Oliver Cromwell. Footnote: the Jews were expelled from England in 1290 by King Edward I. When the plan for readmission of the Jews was discussed, quote, "anti-Jewish prejudices had become strong, and the council would not consent to it," 1654, end quote. Also, quote, "the mercantile interests and the clergy united in opposition," end quote, to the admission of the Jews. It took Cromwell 3 years to overcome the opposition and secure the admission of the Jews. The Jewish Encyclopedia, volume 4, page 366 through 68. End footnote. With their foot in the door, the international Jews approached William of Orange and promised to help place him on the throne of England in exchange for helping them secure a charter to establish a Bank of England. A Jew named Jacob Bonrich was instrumental in this endeavor. William and Mary accepted the crown in 1689, but to justify the bank charter, wars between France and England were now instigated. The constant wars which followed William's accession had compelled the king to borrow large sums from the London merchants, Jews. Out of these loans sprang first the national debt, which was destined to grow, eventually by leaps and bounds, from less than £1 million up to many hundred millions, that all thought of ever paying it is now given up. The second result was the organization of a company for the management of this colossal debt, the Bank of England. Footnote: D. H. Montgomery, The Leading Facts of English History, Boston, Ginn and Company, 1839, second edition, page 288. End footnote. The Jewish merchant secured the bank charter in 1694. From that moment on, Esau Edom had financial dominion over all of Britain. As directors of the bank, they could regulate the gold standard, consolidate the national debt, and even impose direct taxation on the people as a means to secure loans. With control over this bank, the Jews would create wars, business panics, and political upheavals that would affect the entire world. The existence of today's banking system, that is, the taking of money on deposit and loaning it out on interest, actually gave rise in modern times through the endeavors of the Jewish Rothschild family. The financial career of the Rothschilds is the key to the history of Jewish banking in the 19th century. The plan adopted by him of establishing branches in the more important European capitals over which he placed his sons was followed by other Jewish banking houses. The influence of Jews on banking was due to the preliminary advantage given to them by their international position. Footnote: The Jewish Encyclopedia, 1902, Volume 2, page 492-93. The other Jewish families that adopted the Rothschild plan of establishing local banking branches in European cities include the Lazards, Stearns, Spires, Seligmans, Warburgs, and Loeb family. End footnote. Other central banks were established in Europe, which would also branch out their operations. Warburg founded a bank in Hamburg in 1798. Jewish bankers played an important part in the development of joint stock banks. Ludwig Bamberger and Hermann Marcuse were among the founders of the Deutsche Bank, 1870. Among other important Jewish banks was the Banque de Paris, 1872. Jewish bankers played a leading part in the foundation of the Banca Commerciale Italiana and the Credito Italiano. Leading private banks in Hungary were of Jewish origin. Footnote: Encyclopedia Judaica, Volume 4, Banking and Bankers, pages 174-76. End footnote. The Jewish objective was to make all money, loans, credit, and financial transactions worldwide become subject to their centralized control. Esau's crowning achievement in gaining financial dominion over Jacob occurred with the establishment of the Federal Reserve Act, which was signed by the Zionist stooge Woodrow Wilson on December 23, 1913. The chief architect of this plan was the Edomite Jew Paul Warburg of Kuhn Loeb & Co. The legislation created a corporation, the Federal Reserve Bank, whose stock is owned or controlled by Jewish banking firms. Footnote: Controlling stock in the Federal Reserve System is owned principally by 8 international Jewish banks, including 1. Rothschild Banks of London and Berlin, 2. Lazars Brothers Bank of Paris, 3. Israel Moses Seif of Italy, 4. Warburg Bank of Hamburg, 5. Lehman Brothers of New York, 6. Kuhn Loeb & Company of Germany and New York, 7. Chase Manhattan Rockefeller Bank of New York, 8. Goldman Sachs Bank of New York. End footnote. With the Federal Reserve System, the Edomites have the ability to create their own money, Federal Reserve notes and bankbook entries, merely by loaning it out into circulation, and thus can manipulate loans and interest rates. The white people of America are now subject to their new Edomite masters, who created their money, allowing them to buy and sell with it, but monitors how much they receive, W-2 forms, etc., and taxes them for the privilege of that use. The IRS is but a collection agency for the Edomite Federal Reserve banking system. If some alien force wished to covertly take over a nation, no surer method could be devised than by supplanting the nation's money with their own. As President James Garfield said, "Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce." This is the situation that exists with the Jewish Federal Reserve Bank. The descendants of Esau have truly brought about the mark of the beast, so that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark. Revelation 13, verses 16-17. No one in the nation can buy or sell unless they use the Jewish script, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, bank checks, etc. After the Edomite Jews had established their private banks in the individual nations, their next step was to solidify their financial control at the international level. At the close of World War I, certain Jews spearheaded the Bretton Woods Conference in New Hampshire, July 1 through 22, 1944. Articles of agreement were proposed for the establishment of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and a World Bank. This agreement was based on the plans of the Jewish economist Harry Dexter White. White, Harry D., 1892 through 1948, U.S. economist, born in Boston, Massachusetts. In 1938, White was made director of monetary research. His monetary proposals were accepted as the basis for the Bretton Woods Conference, attended by representatives of 44 nations. Footnote: Encyclopedia Judaica, Volume 16, 1971, page 481. End footnote. Jews have always controlled the operations of the IMF and World Bank. Through them, interest rates, loans, currency values, and international trade practices are regulated, making the economic activities of every nation subject to the Jew by way of these financial devices. Their objective of a new international economic order was fulfilled with these international devices. Thus, Esau now has economic dominion over Jacob like never before. Government and political control. The opposing traits and attributes of the two characters of Esau and Jacob would indicate that their society, form of government, and culture would be equally different and contrary to one another as the two characters are. The principles of Hebrew law, justice, and government were adopted by the white European peoples, and never by the Jews. Thus, in white nations, we find the individual rights of property, a system of free enterprise, local control of government, and biblical laws and judgment implemented. But Jews have historically promoted principles of democracy, socialism, and communism, all contrary to sound biblical principles of self-government. A democracy is actually socialism cloaked in the veils of a free republican government. Since democracies easily masquerade as such a government, its insidious nature is undetectable to the bulk of the population who willingly support it. This political concept is not an American institution, but is rather a Jewish contrivance. The egalitarian tendencies of Jewish religion and life fostered democratic feelings at all times. In the 19th century, the Jews of Europe threw their weight everywhere on the side of democracy. They were thus active in movements of this period, both revolutionary and constitutional, to secure the establishment of democratic government in all countries. Footnote: The New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia, 5th edition, Jeffrey Whittaker, editor, Doubleday and Company, New York, 1977, page 541. End footnote. America was always known as a republic, but that changed when the Jewish pawn Woodrow Wilson became president. The U.S. Constitution refers only to republican form of government. Not until the administration of Woodrow Wilson, 1930 to 21, was the U.S. commonly referred to as a democracy. Footnote: The Universal Illustrated Encyclopedia, Banner Press, New York, 1978, page 259. It is also noteworthy that World War I was proclaimed to be fought, quote, to make the world safe for democracy, end quote. In this respect, that war was very successful. Wilson was an ardent advocate of democracy and, on numerous occasions, espoused Jewish causes. The period of his presidency, 1913 to 1921, was marked by the summoning of Jews to high positions. Footnote: The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 10, 1945, page 526. End footnote. With the advent of Woodrow Wilson in 1913, the dominion by the Edomite Jews over American government took a giant step forward. Wilson's political bent toward a pure democracy was contrary to what past statesmen stated. James Madison stated that democracies were a very poor form of government and had always been spectacles of turbulence and contention and were incompatible with personal security or the rights of property. Footnote: James Madison, The Federalist Papers, number 10. End footnote. Democracies operate by a mobocracy, or mob rule. This is a typical Jewish tactic, by which they incite the masses to move in unison, just as a droving team moves a large herd of cattle. All it takes is a little noise and commotion on their right flank to make them all move to the left. The Jewish Anti-Defamation League, in their recent promotional brochure, stated it is dedicated to the fulfillment of America's democratic promise and confronts threats to the security of democracy. Footnote: Jack J. Zarofsky, The ADL Brochure of May 1991. End footnote. Democracy, socialism, and communism are all oppressive to fundamental rights and liberties, hazardous to industry and commerce, and inherently unstable. As evidence that these modes of government are created and promoted by Jews, the following quotes should suffice. The National Geographic Magazine, Volume 18, May 1907, says of the 1905 Russian Revolution that the revolutionary leaders nearly all belonged to the Jewish race, and the most effective revolutionary agency is the Jewish Bund. Page 314. The American Hebrew Magazine, September 10, 1920, stated, the Bolshevist Revolution in Russia was the work of Jewish brains, of Jewish dissatisfaction, of Jewish planning, whose goal is to create a new order in the world. Martin A. Mayer, in his book, Jew and Non-Jew, published by the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, stated that socialism was originated by Jews, and today Jews play a leading role in its spread and interpretation. In the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905, Volume 11, it states that Jews have been prominently identified with the modern socialist movement from its very inception. Page 418. The Jew Chaim Weizmann stated, the Jews stand by Great Britain and will fight on the side of the democracies. The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 2, page 49. The Universal Encyclopedia, Volume 9, 1943, under Soviet Russia, states, the majority of Jewish radicals adhered to democratic socialism. Page 668. The Jew Stuart Kahn, in Wolf in the Kremlin, 1987, wrote, after all, wasn't the revolution prepared and fashioned by Jews? Both of Karl Marx's grandfathers were rabbis, and Lenin's grandfather was also Jewish. And wasn't Yaakov, or Jacob, Sverdlov, the first chief of state, a Jew, as was Trotsky himself? Page 81. Rabbi Stephen S. Wise is quoted in The American Bulletin of May 15, 1935, as stating, some call it Marxism, I call it Judaism. The Jewish Chronicle of April 4, 1919, printed, there is much in the fact that so many Jews are Bolsheviks, in the fact that the ideals of Bolshevism are at many points consonant with the finest ideals of Judaism. George Marlin, in his book, Stalin, Trotsky, or Lenin, 1937, stated, if the tide of history does not turn toward communist internationalism, then the Jewish race is doomed. Page 414. Harry Watton in A Program for the Jews and an Answer to All Anti-Semites, 1939, wrote, it is not an accident that Judaism gave birth to Marxism, and it is not an accident that the Jews readily took up Marxism. All that is in perfect accord with the progress of Judaism and the Jews. Page 148. It is the natural inclination for the Jew to reject all godly or biblical aspects of government and to promote atheistic and humanistic forms of government, such as democracy, socialism, or communist regime. Footnote: Jewish-formed governments may have other names, such as social democracy, the name of the draconian rule under Lenin. End footnote. These political concepts stem from the Talmudic and Babylonian philosophies of government, whose end is total control and dominion. The Edomites, as well as the Judahites who remained in Babylon after the captivity, had exposure to the Babylonian ways of law and government. Both of these groups form a significant part of the modern-day Jews. It should be self-evident that nearly every government on earth is either a democracy, a socialist state, or communist regime. It makes little difference which, since they are all Jewish-initiated and controlled. This was not accidental, but a necessary plan for Esau to gain dominion. Not only are our governments the product of Jewish manipulation, but our political leaders have succumbed to their power. Leaders worldwide have become Jewish puppets and yes-men as they buckle under and whore themselves out to the power of the Jews' purse. Others owe an obligation to the Jews for getting them in office. But the Jews always make sure to pick the cowardly and traitorous types for political office, or those who have the Jewish type of subversive and revolutionary mindset. The control Jews have had over political leaders have virtually put them at the head of every nation. In America, Jews have had an influence over every president and many congressmen ever since Woodrow Wilson, some of whom have directly taken orders from Jews in and outside of government. Some of these Jews include Paul Warburg, Henry Morgenthau, Bernard Baruch, Robert Strauss, Herbert H. Lehman, Eugene F. Mayer, Judges Brandeis and Cardoza, Rabbi Stephen A. Wise, Felix Frankfurter, Henry Kissinger, and many others. As early as 1920, a large Jewish influence in government was noted by Henry Ford. The Jews, a political minority so far as votes are concerned, were a political majority so far as influence was concerned during the last 5 years. They ruled. They boast that they ruled. The mark of their rule is everywhere. Footnote: The International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, 1920, Volume 1, page 209. End footnote. The Jews in many white nations have formed political lobbying groups whose influence and power are second to none. In America, the Jewish lobby has 125 political actions committees, or PACs, whose political clout is kept concealed from the public. These PACs are controlled by the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, IPAC, which is a branch of the Israeli Embassy in Washington. IPAC is thus a lobby for a foreign government. These Jewish PACs can get pro-Israeli politicians elected, have pro-American and Christian politicians defeated, manipulate foreign policy, control immigration, draft legislation, and pressure congressmen as to how to vote. Thus, Congress is in actuality a Judaic legislative body. George Washington once said that government is a force. Our problem in a nutshell today is that the Edomites now have control and dominion over our governments, and they now wield that force to their advantage and our disadvantage, or for their benefit and our detriment. Edom's one-world government. Jacob, as inheritor of the birthright, had the right to have dominion in the earth, and was promised that his descendants would spread throughout the earth, Genesis 28, verse 14, becoming a multitude of nations, Genesis 48, verses 4 and 19. Edom's plan to overcome this is by creating a world government under its control. Once all nations become democracies, socialist states, or communist regimes, it is an easy step to get them to come under a one-world control. To attain this world government, some means must be procured through which it can be administered and enforced. That vehicle is the United Nations. It is the chief instrument in world government. The United Nations, like the League of Nations, was a Jewish plan and concept. It was promoted and supported by Jews, and it serves Jewish and Zionist goals. A couple of years after the establishment of the United Nations, the Jew David Ben-Gurion stated, "Our Jewish policy must be the unity of the human race. The world is divided into two blocks. We consider that the United Nations ideal is a Jewish ideal." Footnote, Time Magazine, August 16, 1948, page 25. End footnote. When a nation becomes a member of the United Nations, it surrenders its sovereignty and independent status. It now becomes subject to the international law of Edom and is not free to decide its own destiny. This was made evident through the events of the Iraqi War, Desert Storm. The United States did not act according to congressional act or pursuant to its constitution, but to a UN resolution. America is not a sovereign nation. It is subject to the dictates of the Edomite-controlled United Nations. The world program that it follows is a Jewish program. Jewry's political outlook is world rule in the material sense. Jewry is an international nation. It is this and nothing else which gives significance to its financial, educational, propagandist, revolutionary, and immigration programs. Footnote, The International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, Volume 3, 1921, page 178. End footnote. At the forefront of this one-world plan is the war against nationalism, which is the greatest threat and obstacle for the Jews to confront in their ultimate plan. Thus, propaganda against national independence and sovereignty is always promoted by Jews. No other group of people would be motivated against nationalism, since each has always had its own nation. However, the Jew is a citizen of the world. One world dominion has long been a plan of the Jews. This is prevalent in their Zionist movement, which is part of the Jewish ideal of ruling the world. This plan was made explicit by the Jew and CFR member James P. Warburg in testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on February 17, 1950, stating, "We shall have world government whether or not you like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent." The Jew Baruch Levy, back in the mid-1800s, had clearly expressed the ultimate goals of the Jews. "The Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. It will attain world dominion by the dissolution of other races, by the abolition of frontiers, the annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. In this new world order, the Jews will furnish all the leaders without encountering opposition. The governments of the different peoples forming the world republic will fall without difficulty into the hands of the Jews. It will then be possible for the Jewish rulers to abolish private property and everywhere to make use of the resources of the state. Thus will the purpose of the Talmud be fulfilled, in which it is said that when the Messianic time has come, the Jews will have all the property of the whole world in their hands." Footnote, Baruch Levy, from a letter to Karl Marx, from La Revue de Paris, page 574, June 1, 1928. End footnote. The Jews don't await a Messiah or believe any ever existed. Rather, they are their own Messiah, and that Messiah, they believe, will one day rule the world. The time of Jacob's trouble. Jacob's loss of dominion and Esau gaining the dominion over him marks the start of that period prophesied in the Bible as the time of Jacob's trouble, Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Esau's dominion can only exist at the expense of Israel's religion and status. This dramatic scene has brought about a system like the Mystery Babylon described in Revelation 17:5. Unlike captivities and afflictions of the past, this captivity is not physical or obvious, but a mystery due to covert modes of control. It's what some have called the invisible government. It would actually take several volumes to fully discuss the Jewish domination in the areas discussed. Many other areas could also be discussed in which Jewish influence and dominion exists over the white Christian nations, e.g., religion, media, culture, laws, and education. The manner in which Jews have gained dominion over these areas has been a mystery to most. But as the Jew Marcus Eli Ravage states, the dominion is a reality. You, Christians, make much noise and fury about the undue Jewish influence in your theaters and movie palaces. Very good. Granted, your complaint is well-founded. But what is that compared to our staggering influence in your churches, your schools, your laws, and your governments, and the very thoughts you think every day? We took you in hand and pulled down the beautiful and generous structure you had reared and changed the whole course of your history. We conquered you as no empire of yours ever subjugated Africa or Asia, and we did it all without armies, without bullets, without blood or turmoil, without force of any kind. We did it solely by the irresistible might of our spirit, with ideas, with propaganda. Footnote: The Century Magazine, January 1928, Volume 115, Number 3, page 347 through 48. End footnote. Israel's rule and dominion on the earth was to weaken when in transgression to God's laws. The stranger shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Deuteronomy 28, verse 44. We thus have to ask, who has control and dominion over whom in this world? It is the white race that is losing its power and sovereignty to the Edomite Jews. It is the white race that has been put under financial bondage to the Jew monetary system. It is the white race that must now live under Jewish laws and governments. It is the white nations, Germany, America, England, that the Jews have tricked into giving them money, aid, and technology to support their anti-Christian and bastardized state in Palestine. And it is our political leaders who are controlled by Jew advisors and lobbying groups. This is all due to the legacy of the two races. Two great forces have been struggling for dominion in the world. The Edomite Jews have gained the dominion and have broken the yoke of the white race from their necks, as was prophesied to happen with Esau and Jacob.